Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry Hahn, woman liberationist, and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student in the search, discovery, and revelation of life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, same thing, different day. Just how far have we come in the good old USA? Let's take a brief look at a couple of incidents and discuss, because we don't have all a lifetime to talk about how far we come, right? We're going to start off with this strange, but maybe not so strange, incident in Mississippi. Well, we have, I think it was 6 white former law enforcement officers called themselves the Goon Squad, pleaded guilty to a racist assault on 2 black men in a home raid that ended with an officer shooting 1 man in the mouth. Usually a mouth shot is a, like, that's like a death sentence. Well, it depends on what angle it is, but anyway, that could be a death sentence. Anyway, the officers entered the house, they say, without a warrant on January 24th, assaulting the men with a sex object and using stun guns and other objects to abuse them over a roughly about 90-minute period. So that right there says some of these 6 of them, they're all strange. This ain't even the usual roughing up thing. This is some kinky, weirdo, goofy stuff. The civil rights charges come after an Associated Press investigation linked the deputies to at least 4 violent encounters with black men since 2019 that left 2 dead and another with lasting injuries. Okay? So these guys been having a good old time. And I'm not saying that's a way to have a good time. You get it, right? So Rankin County Sheriff Brian Bailey announced on June 27th that all 5 deputies involved in the episode had been fired or resigned. It was later revealed that a 6th law enforcement officer was also to be fired. These guys are they move pretty slow down there in Mississippi, don't they? They entered the house without a warrant on January 24th. Did their due, whatever kind of kinky, brutal, sadistic, masochistic, sadistic thing they're into. This is some goofy stuff right here. And were fired or resigned as of June 27th. Not arrested. Sounds like the usual suspects doing the usual type of thing. Not even to be surprised that it even occurred. It's just as though things are hard pressed to change because these guys have been doing this for a minute. From CNN, Rankin County Sheriff's Office in Mississippi has fired multiple deputies after 2 black men filed a federal civil rights lawsuit alleging 6 white deputies entered their private residence illegally and tortured them for nearly 2 hours. Well, that's easy enough to find out if they had a warrant, right? So, due to recent developments, including findings during our internal investigation, those deputies that were still employed by this department have been terminated. The deputies have been on administrative leave, the sheriff said, and he declined to comment on specific allegations. Right? The terminations come roughly 2 weeks after Michael Jenkins and Eddie Parker filed a lawsuit alleging the 6 deputies entered their Braxton home in January and handcuffed, kicked, waterboarded. If I'm right, that's water torture. That's really, phew. We used that during the war. Repeatedly used tasers on the men and attempted to sexually assault them. Okay, what kind of goofy guys y'all got on the force? This is 6 goofy guys. One deputy also put a gun in Jenkins' mouth and shot him. That's what the lawsuit's saying, right? So the lawsuit was filed June 12th in U.S. District Court, Mississippi, It names Bailey and six deputies as defendants and seeks $400 million in damages. So, terminations came 2 weeks after a lawsuit was filed against the six deputies. That thing said Bailey and six deputies. Anyway, alleging they came into the home, tortured them, attempted to sexually assault one of them. What about the arrest? What is the... I mean, they just get fired? Like, is it something that... Is it a rule that if you're a police officer and you break the law, you just get fired, you don't get arrested, you don't get thrown in jail like everybody else, shooting somebody in the mouth? That's weird. That's some goofy stuff right there. That is the short version. This is a longer version from the New York Times. After barging into the house, they handcuffed the men, shot them with stun guns, used racial slurs, beat them with kitchen tools and a metal sword, and poured milk, alcohol, and chocolate syrup onto their faces. Psych eval, right? These guys, how did they pass the psych eval? At one point, Mr. Elwood put an unloaded gun into Mr. Jenkins' mouth and pulled the trigger. Prosecutors, right, described as a mock execution attempt. Why is the prosecutor saying that? Because that just is just a terrorist attack on this man. That's all it is. Not a mock anything. It's a I'm going to blow your brains out, shoot you in your mouth thing. That's what that is. So the prosecutor shouldn't be saying that. I can see the defense saying that. It was a mock, you know. But it seemed like they're setting it up to soften the fall for these guys. Mr. Elwood then racked the slide. I've seen that, the slide. That's the semi-automatic handgun. You pull the slide, put a bullet up in the chamber. Right? Intended to dry fire. Well, you rack the slide to put a bullet in the chamber, intended to dry fire the gun a second time. Is the prosecutor saying that or the defense? Because that sounds more like something for the defense to say. Hope that's not the prosecutor saying that. Because that means they have two lawyers in the courtroom working for them, the defense and the prosecutor. Right? So you see how goofy this thing is getting? And anyway, when he pulled the trigger again, a bullet went through Jenkins' neck. He pulled the trigger and a bullet went through. He shot Jenkins in the mouth, right? It went through his neck, cutting his tongue and breaking his jaw, all right? So he pulled the slide back, chambered a bullet, shot this man in the mouth. Now, to say if that was an accident or he really meant to do it or not. We know he actually did it, right? So just go by the evidence, intent. It seems like you got two people arguing for him in this case. Then somebody by the name of Mr. Ope Duke attached a sex toy to the end of a BB gun and shoved it into Mr. Parker's mouth and also tried to force it into Mr. Jenkins' mouth. Weirdos. Right? This is the goon squad? Wow. This is more like the weirdo squad. They shot them with stun guns, kicked them in the ribs. Mr. Parker was kicked in the ribs. Mr. Detman demanded to know where the drugs were. Fired a shot into the back of the house. Mr. Parker replied that there were no drugs. The officers tried to cover up the attack. They planted a gun on Mr. Jenkins, submitted fake drug evidence to a crime lab, and destroyed surveillance videos. Shell casings and taser cartridges. Obstruction. Malik Shabazz, a lawyer for Mr. Parker and Mr. Jenkins, said in an email that the guilty pleas on Monday were historic. Historic guilty pleas. Y'all ever hear that? this story is just weird to me. Maybe it's me. I don't know. They represented the first time in Mississippi history that a white law enforcement officer has ever been held criminally accountable for police misconduct against a black person. The first time in Mississippi history. Now, if it's me, let me know. We're in a very low place when the first time white police officers being held criminally accountable for police misconduct against a black person is considered historic. It must be how they handle things in good old Mississippi. Remember, Emmett Till and those guys, law enforcement. 1955, 14-year-old Emmett Till was kidnapped out of the home of his relatives. I think it was an uncle, somebody, grandparents, somebody. Bryant and his brother-in-law, Malam, who severely beat him, gouging out his eyes, shot him in the head. Then they tied a large metal fan to his neck with barbed wire and threw him into the Tallahatchie River, right? His body was recovered, and it opened an investigation, right? From Action News said that a report released found that Till died of a gunshot wound to the head and that he had broken wrist bones and skull and leg fractures. Roy Bryant, yeah, that's his first name, the white woman's husband, is, I forgot to tell you this, they went after this brother, this young brother, very young brother, because the wife said he whistled at her, wolf whistle or something like that. Some crazy mess. As you see going on the internet now, you see some of these white women just lying, calling the police on people, right? Anyway, her husband and his half-brother, J.W. Millam, were charged with Till's death shortly after the killing, but were acquitted by an all-white jury. They were acquitted by an all-white jury. Both men, now deceased, confessed in a 1956 interview with Look magazine. So they killed Emmett viciously, right, egregiously, in 1955 and confessed to the homicide, the egregious murder, vicious murder of this young kid with Look magazine. That's before YouTube. What's that TikTok and all that stuff? All because they thought Emmett Till had whistled at a white woman, Bryant's wife, just because he was black? Mississippi is a hell of a place. Laws may change, but some people don't change. So I was going, man, these people hate people down there. Like they hate black people that much in Mississippi, that, and they've been doing their dirt for so long. I guess it's just something to a black person is nothing. It's like stepping on an ant or something. I don't know. It just seems that way. You got the cops doing it now, six, and they've been doing it. And we don't know how many people they've been doing the thing to. So I'm wondering how hatred hurts you. They said hatred triggers the mind to try to predict what the actions of the person being hated may do as a way to protect you. But this leads to further anxiety, restlessness, obsessive thinking, and paranoia, which also then impacts negatively in the way you engage relationships, right? So it's hurting you and it's hurting the people you engaging with. So hate crimes are commonly defined as harmful acts toward a person or group based on actual or perceived group membership. Acts of hate are thought to be effortful and intentional. Well, I'd say those guys were putting a lot of effort into what they was doing, those police, And so did these two white guys with Emmett Till, breaking his wrists, legs, just doing all kinds of stuff to this young man. So hate-motivated behavior poses a threat to the population's well-being, especially for vulnerable populations, Emmett Till's so-called minority in this country. And, of course, those two brothers called minority in this country also, right? So the Federal Bureau of Investigation recognizes groups targeted on basis of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender, religion, and disability. Is hate the reason why these heroes decided to rape, torture, and shoot these innocent black men? If they were drug dealers, their actions would still be criminal and sadistic. This sounds reminiscent of the so-called not-so-distant America past. The audacity of these monsters torturing and shooting a man in the mouth, and all they got was termination of employment. Don't try this at home, kids. These monsters are trained, vicious dogs whose lack of respect for human life, absence of moral and ethical foundation, and hatred of black people precedes them. Imagine all the crimes they actually got away with. Imagine others like them existing. A man was shot in the mouth and no one was arrested immediately? Oh, I forgot. They covered up their transgression by incriminating the victims. Should have been no time to resign, no time to be fired. These guys should have been thrown in jail until they figure out what happened. Unless they already know that these guys roll like this. From Associated Press. Six white former Mississippi law officers pleaded guilty. All six recently admitted their guilt in a connected federal civil rights case. Federal civil rights case. What come to the local guys ain't do nothing to these guys? What happened? Federal prosecutors saw echoes of Mississippi's dark history, including the 1964 killing of three civil rights workers after a deputy handed them off to the Ku Klux Klan, the KKK. A deputy handed some civil rights workers to the KKK in Mississippi. Good old Mississippi. Anyway, locally, the sheriffs whose deputies committed the crimes called it the worst case of police brutality he had ever seen. Prosecutors say some of the officers nicknamed themselves the Goon Squad. This is talking about that to these six weirdos. Because of their willingness to use excessive force and cover-up tactics, including the assault that ended with a deputy shooting one victim in the mouth. From the New York Times, the guilty plea comes less than 2 weeks after a former officer pleaded guilty to federal civil rights offenses stemming from the raid on January 24th. So these guys wasn't giving in to nothing until the last minute, the 11th hour. So that's a scary situation. It seems like this type of thing, we're not out of the woods yet. Right, black folks, I'm sorry to report that to you today. We're just simply not out of the woods. Which brings me to, guess I'm down south for a minute. Three charged in assault after boaters attacked dock employee at Montgomery, Alabama riverbank. And I was like, damn, Montgomery, Alabama, that's historic down there. I know a little bit about Montgomery, Alabama. Anyway, warrants were issued in a Alabama dock brawl. This is from CBC, CA News, right? Warrants were issued because after the brawl of after a group of white men attacked a black riverboat worker, I seen the video on this one. Video show a violent incident that sparked fight largely split along racial lines. So what happened was a video shows several white boaters attacking a black co-captain of a riverboat before other black people came to his aid, triggering a huge fight that appeared to be drawn on racial lines. I did see a white guy there in the beginning. It turned out, I think it was a young boy. They punched him in his stomach, and I think that was all he was willing to do for that black dot worker. He probably couldn't fight, so, and he didn't want to get beat up. So he didn't, you know, but the brothers came. The cavalry came. Police in Alabama have issued warrants for in connection with the Riverboat Brawl in Alabama's capital that drew nationwide attention after the video showed a group of white people pummeling a black riverboat captain, an exchange that sparked a massive fight. It was a big fight. It wasn't no real huge thing. It was about, you know, like a small gang war, you know, about maybe like 10 to 12 group of 10 to 12, I don't know, 8 to 12, I don't know, something like that. I don't know. It was getting it in, though. Men and women, all ages. The co-captain of the city-operated Harriet II, whom police identified Thursday as Damian Pickett, tried to get the pontoon boat moved that was blocking the riverboat from docking. They got a little, like they got Spirit of Philadelphia, got a little boat that goes out, and, you know, I guess they expect the boaters to be courteous, you know, but these guys weren't courteous. You know, they was like, you know, try to get him to move. He wouldn't move. He got a hole. He's trying to handle his business down there. He getting paid. You know, so the video was taken by a riverboat passenger, right, and shared widely on social media, showed the moment a white man shoved and punched Pickett. The conflict escalated when several white people joined in on attacking him. I've seen the black dude threw his hat. Now, people threw it, he threw his hat way in the air. It's like, whoa, what's that all about? So I don't know if it was really about anything or not. That somebody joked that on the internet, saying that was a signal. A white lady was saying that. Anyway, it sparked a large brawl on the dock. They was getting it in. Police investigating the Riverboat Brawl in Alabama. They issued warrants for three white men, which was surprising. This is Alabama. What Martin Luther King House, right? Rosa Parks had to went to jail for sitting in the front of the bus, not giving up her seat. It's Alabama. Montgomery had to march in Montgomery, Selma to Montgomery. So anyway, they said after a thorough review of the evidence with the local FBI, how did the FBI get involved in that? There are no charges relating to a hate or racially biased crime for the incident of a riot, they said. Now, this is where it starts getting goofy. No charges related to a hate or racially biased crime or for the incident of a riot. Police have also requested to speak with the black man who was seen on the video wielding a folding chair. He was knocking people down with a chair. Old dude. You know, they were just getting it in, you know, defending this black guy. They jumped this dude, man, and like white black people came out of nowhere. Because it looked like he's about to get stomped to death. And, you know, one black dude showed up, and you can see one black dude jump in the water like a superhero. He jumped off one dock, swam to the next dock to fight. Hell of a scene. Like something out of the movies. So why does this fight warrant so much attention in the media? The FBI and the FBI. Why does the FBI not perceive racial bias and the instigation of a riot perpetrated by those angry, aggressive white folk on the Montgomery, Alabama dock that day? Why Yeah, why the FBI didn't see that? The ABC news perceives the brawl to be divided between racial lines, and I suspect many viewers do also. The conflict received a lot of media attention, a lot. The support that the black dot worker received from fellow blacks, African Americans in the area was phenomenal. I'm going to say that. One brother jumped to the water, as I say, and swam to the dock to defend the black dot worker. Hey, you can't do that. Brothers and sisters came from everywhere to the aid and defense of the black dot worker to administer street, or should I say dock justice, on the offending white mob on the docks of Montgomery, Alabama. That is where they had the Montgomery bus boycott, which, just to give you a little historical background, that's where that took place. Martin Luther King's house was bombed there. So he lived, I think his wife is from there, because he met her somewhere upstate, Connecticut, somewhere way up there somewhere. Anyway, Rosa Parks didn't get off the bus, as I mentioned, you know. So folks down there have been going through it for a minute. Rosa Parks didn't get off the bus. I ain't getting off the bus. Lock me up. Do what you want to do. Activists, they backed her up for the Montgomery Improvement Association to boycott the transit system, and they chose Martin Luther King as their leader, right? So Martin, you know, he's a good speaker. His house was blown up while he was somewhere giving a speech. They bombed his house where I think his wife and 7-week-old daughter, Yolanda, and a neighbor were inside. The front of the home was damaged, but no one was injured. But that's to give you some, you know. So these guys probably down there been getting foot to place to the, on the neck, the butt, all kinds of stuff down there. And you see, they fighters down there. Montgomery, they weren't playing. They down there didn't think of it. I know there's a history of slavery, oppression, aggression, lynching, raping, and robbing black folks of whatever they had and they wanted in Montgomery. But there is also a history of a unified black collective against the atrocities of racism in Montgomery, Alabama. It was good to see black folks standing for something in the media after being bombarded by negative images of black folk perpetrating the untimely demise of other black folk. It was good to see black folk standing for something in the media after being bombarded by negative images of black folk perpetuating the untimely demise of other black folk. Maybe there is still hope for us, united literally and figuratively, fighting for our survival. As previously stated, fear impairs the individual's ability to think rationally. I would like to say Jason Van Dyke was not in fear of his life when he murdered Laquan McDonald. Yes, I just changed the subject, but not really. He wasn't in fear of what could happen if he was found or proven to be the vicious, cold-blooded murderer he actually is. That's what he was in fear of. A man in fear doesn't do what he did. So Jason Van Dyke is guilty of murdering Laquan McDonald in Chicago. Laquan McDonald had a knife in his hand. He has a mental health problem. He's walking down the street. Police said where they are already on the scene, surrounding him and monitoring him. And this hero, Jason Van Dyke, pulled up in his car, got out of his car, shot this kid 16 times, I think. Shot him once, he hit the ground, and he kept shooting him. Don't videotape, check it out for yourself. You want to check it out. If it's still there, I don't know. Not for the faint of heart. And he killed this guy, right? This young boy. Within seconds of coming on the scene. driving to the scene, right? So Jason Van Dyke and his partner were among the last officers to arrive. Van Dyke got out of his car, and within seconds, he shot McDonald 16 times. Many of the bullets striking McDonald after he lay crumped on the ground. Initially, Van Dyke had argued McDonald was a threat. That sound familiar? And he was fearful of being attacked. A graphic video from police dash cam released via court order a year later. Contradicted the story. A year later, come on now. Anybody associated with that video should have been fired. That's obstruction. Contradicted the story. It showed McDonald walking away from police, knife in hand. A jury found Jason Van Dyke guilty of second-degree murder and 16 counts of aggravated burglary. Now, you might want to say, what's wrong with this picture? Van Dyke received a more lenient sentence. Prosecutors had asked for a term of at least 18 years, but the judge, Vincent Gohan sentenced Van Dyke to 81 months, just under 7 years. And for the sole charge of second-degree murder charge in Illinois, a sentence for second-degree murder is less severe than aggravated battery, they said. It's interesting. For now, Jason Van Dyke is out of prison on mandated supervised release from the Illinois version of parole, mandated supervised release. See, that's what happens when you get out of prison and you haven't served all your time, right? Everyone knows, right? This is, Marvin Hunter, primary spokesman for the McDonald family, says everyone knows the time did not fit the crime. Oh, do we know that? From RestoreJustice.com. In Illinois, a person can be charged and convicted of first-degree murder, a conviction that carries a minimum sentence of 23 years and, under certain circumstances, a maximum sentence of natural life until you die, right? Even if they did not actually kill the victim, even if they actually did not kill the victim or intend to commit the murder. Okay, but we got a guy that actually killed the person and intended to kill. You cannot say you didn't intend to kill nobody and you shoot him 16 times, particularly if he's laying on the ground. Anyway. That is what they wanted to save Van Dyke from. A minimum sentence of 20 years, a maximum sentence of natural life. They was trying to, they had already, the fix is in. Right? So this thing is, think about what you can do to black folks and if you get penalized, how lenient the penalty is going to be and so forth. That's still continuing. Because everybody just looking at that, oh, it took him a year to get this man in jail. And it was other officers on the scene. Somebody on the scene should have arrested this man. From IllinoisDefense.com, lawyer, says aggravated battery is typically a Class 3 felony. Class 3 felonies can put you behind bars for up to 5 years. Class 2 felonies can put you behind bars for up to 7 years. Class 1 felonies can put you behind bars for up to 15 years. So, if I shoot you once, that's a Class 2 felony. Can put you in jail, put me in jail for up to 7 years. So, if I shoot him 16 times, shouldn't that be 16 times 7? Or 15 times second, because he killed one of them. One of those bullets killed him. I don't know which one, But I don't know if he was dead and when he killed him, he shot him 5 more times or what. I don't even know. But what gunshots are they, you know, giving up this penalty for? Aggravated battery. It just seems to me that they just took control. That's how they take control of the case. We're going to charge him with aggravated battery, second-degree murder. You had to, go with murder because, hey, he murdered somebody. It is evident that Van Dyke was not charged with the crime he actually committed. But if Van Dyke is charged with 16 counts of aggravated battery, which carries up to 7 years, 7 times 16 is 120 years. That's the max. He should have got the max of that. What math are they using? 1 year for each count places Van Dyke in prison for 16 years, or at least 15, if you're going to give him one deadly shot. I don't even know how they're going with it. Not including obstruction of justice, which is egregious, considering he shot Laquan McDonald 16 times within seconds of arriving at the scene and lied about what actually happened. Laquan lunging at him with a knife. It is a ridiculous theory any way you look at it. Prosecutors asked for a prison term of 18 years. Even that's lenient. What kind of math are they using? Van Dyke not only murdered Laquan McDonald in cold blood, he lied about what happened, and that is obstruction of justice. Also, for a video not to be entered as evidence, right, any, or for police officers not to enter a testimony as evidence of what happened that night, that's obstruction. From WWW Hankin Law. Illinois Criminal Code Chapter 720, Section 5/9-1 contains the laws applying to first-degree murder. A fine law explains for you to receive first-degree murder conviction, the prosecutor, right, the guy who was supposed to be making sure this guy go to jail, must prove at least one of the following 3 things at your trial. You intended to kill your alleged victim or do him or her great bodily harm. Well, that's evident. He's dead, period. 16 shots, all right? That you knew that the act you intended to commit carried with it the strong probability that it would gravely injure your kill or kill your alleged victim. 16 shots, all right? That says that, right? You know it. You're a police officer. You're a trained guy with a gun, right? You pull your weapon out. You're not supposed to be pulling it out unless there's a lethal threat in the first place, right? Only person perceiving a lethal threat that night happened to be this genius, Van Dyke. You killed your alleged victim while committing or attempting to commit a forcible felony. What? Is Chicago saying that they are not able to find Van Dyke guilty of one of these infractions? I can't. Intent is proven when you shoot someone 16 times, 15 times while he lay on the ground. He knew the act he intended to commit carried with it a strong probability that it would gravely injure or kill his alleged victim. Again, 16 times he's shooting this guy. Think he didn't know? What are we saying? Like, how did they get away with this? How do we let them get away with that? Section 720, Illinois CS 5/2-8, forcibly felony, right? Law officers of Mitchum Furman said a forcible felon means treason, first-degree murder, second-degree murder, some other stuff, predatory criminal sexual assault of a child, aggravated criminal assault, stuff like that. They're going to go down to this thing talking about aggravated battery resulting in great bodily harm or permanent disability or disfigurement. Aggravated battery. So aggravated battery seems to be in itself does not include a homicide. Illinois GA.gov. a battery. A person commits a battery if he or she knowingly, without legal justification, by any means, without legal justification or any means, right, causes bodily harm to an individual, makes physical contact of an insulting or provoking nature to an individual. That's what a battery is. So a battery does not involve death or homicide. A battery does not cause death. It causes physical injury. Aggravated battery involves a battery using a deadly weapon, causing disfigurement, impairment, but the victim is still alive. Van Dyke shot Laquan McDonald till he was dead. Maybe even after he was dead. That is murder. Why was he charged with 16 counts of aggravated battery? These folks getting away with all this goofy stuff. It's just part of the problem. Now, I guess some people may have seen that as a victory. That's not a victory. That's actually, they took Van Dyke to court to get Van Dyke the best outcome they could get for Van Dyke. That's what appears to have happened there. And if you keep watching, monitor these guys in Mississippi, those six weirdos, cops. And you're going to see the same thing probably going to happen with them. Just look to see if it happens. I can't even predict, but it's just, you know, they're going to try to give them the least amount of time that they can give them. They ain't throwing a book at them. But they should throw the book and the courthouse at them. Because these guys are making it bad for guys that want to do their job that would never do that. You know, they're making it bad. And then they're creating this gulf between the community, the black community and police officers, which we already have, but historically already have. And this is not helping it. This case here with Van Dyke, not helping. Because the message is sending out is that we're going to take it in court and we're going to lessen your fault there. And you can tell the fix was in it, what they charging them with and everything, how many counts he's going to get, whether, you know, how's, you know, it's just, I don't know. Time two is dead. So, ILGA.gov legislation says an aggravated battery is defined as in subdivision A2 is a class X felony in which a person shall be sentenced to a term of imprisonment of a minimum of 6 years and a maximum of 45 years. Aggravated battery is defined as a subdivision E5 is a class X for which a person shall be sentenced to a term of imprisonment of a minimum of 12 years and a maximum of 45 years. This is what they were saving this guy from. It's they got the same thing in E4, it's class X felony, minimum of 15 years and a maximum of 60 years. So tell me, E8, class X felony, minimum of 20 years and a maximum of 60 years. Don't tell me. Who do you think? You think the man was on trial, or do you think the trial was set up, you know, to make his fall a little softer? Because that's what it looked like to me. That's exactly what it looks like. Still, the punishment does not fit the crime they charged Van Dyke with. The charge, to me, does not fit the act. You know, they were charged him with second-degree murder and 16 counts of, what's that? Aggravated battery. Should have been first-degree murder, period. He got out. His life wasn't in jeopardy. He got out of the car. Nobody's life was in jeopardy. The guy only had a knife in his hand. So he didn't have a gun pointed at him or nothing. And 17 times, why? He shot him at least 15 times on the ground. or at him. I don't know. He must be a good shot if he managed to shoot him 16 times. So that also shows intent. You were able to hit this guy 16 times. That's intent. Because I see people in intent to shoot. They ain't close up. They can't hit. That's why a lot of us still alive today or don't have holes healing up in us, because folk can't shoot. They will shoot, but they're not good shot. Not good shot. They don't have good pistol. Anyway, another one from ILGA.gov legislation says 720 Illinois CS5/9-1 from CH338 para .9-1. We're talking about first degree murder, right? A person who kills an individual without lawful justification commits first degree murder if, in performing the act of which caused the death, he or she intends to kill or do great bodily harm. Now, can somebody tell me, if I get out of my car, shoot somebody 16 times who's not approaching me, okay, if he got a butcher knife, a sword in his hand, he's not even coming my way. I'm driving the way he is. Now, we call that creating your own jeopardy. Now, police officers are not supposed to create his own jeopardy. There's already people on the scene, police officers, holding it down, watching the guy. They must have known he was a little crazy or something. But these guys weren't, you know, trying to kill him. So that sounds like murder to me. You would think Laquan's dead body would be a serious clue. That sounds like first degree murder. Yet somehow this monster was charged with 16 counts of aggravated battery and second degree murder. Somebody help me with that, because that makes no sense. Is it not a felony for a police officer to get out of his vehicle and murder someone within seconds of arriving on the scene, and that person is walking away from the police officer, especially where police presence is already there, or to attempt to place himself in jeopardy to attempt to justify murdering someone? Because that might be the other flip side of what this guy did. He might be not intelligently smart, but smart enough to know if I position myself somewhere where I could manipulate the situation to say that this guy presents a threat to me, I could kill this guy. Because that's the other twist of what he might have did. Sorry to put it that way, but hey, he's a man first, a police officer second. You don't put on a blue suit and change what you are inside. You just change what you look like on the outside. Anyway, from criminallawyerillinois.com, right? They say obstruction of justice is a class 4 felony offense for which the punishment can be 1 to 3 years in prison. So you think somebody murdered somebody and then cover it up. A police officer, you think he should get the least amount of time or the most amount of time for obstruction, that homicide? What do you think he should get? He did the ultimate thing to somebody, so he can get the ultimate sentence. The fine can be up to $25,000, they said. The judge has the option of sentencing the defendant to probation as opposed to incarceration. Well, we got a body here, and we got a man that shot him 16 times. What do you think he should get? What a precedent. You can lie about murdering a 17-year-old black male, at least in Chicago, shooting him 16 times on video, and get out in 7 years. In fact, Jason Van Dyke isn't the only person who should have been charged that night. There were officers on the scene that should have testified against him. Rank and file law enforcement who obstructed justice did everything they could to see that Van Dyke remain a free man. Van Dyke shot Laquan within seconds of driving to the scene and about 16 times while he lay on the ground, maybe 15. Van Dyke lied about Laquan lunging at him with a knife. That is cold-blooded murder. If being fearful is a reason to use deadly force, we can expect more cold-blooded murders by law enforcement. Based on the I fear for my life scenario, theory, or protocol, civilians should get to shoot law enforcement or anybody else when they are in fear of their lives. If that sounds stupid and insane, that is exactly how stupid and insane it is for trained law enforcement to use it as an excuse or a legitimate reason. You don't feel threatened. You are threatened imminently. And resulting from that threat, you fear for your life. That makes sense. And it is logical. It may be a reason for the lethal action, but it is hardly an excuse. An excuse justifies and validates the behavior. Excuse implies intent to avoid or remove blame or censure. So, hey, it's my excuse. Hey, I blew his head off, but I'm excused. I don't get blamed for this. I don't get charged. I'm the police. Reason, a basis of cause, as for some belief, action, fact, event, etc. A statement offered in explanation or justification, a rational ground or motive, the thing that makes some fact intelligible. Do y'all get what I'm saying here? Nothing about what Van Dyke did representing either one of those words, excuse or reason. A sufficient ground of explanation or a logical defense. He had no logical defense. It was unintelligible what he did. It's a rational ground for motive. His rational ground for motive must be he wanted to kill that night, right? Explanation or justification. He used it as an explanation and justification. He lied. Well, we have a caller. Welcome to Provocative Thought, 2968. Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought.
What's up? What's up? How you doing? How you doing?
All right, my brother. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. You know how it is. It's a beautiful day, you know, on the inside, you know, understand? And boy, let me tell you something. On the inside, I enjoy my feelings. You know what I mean?
I feel you.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but sometimes, but just let me just peep this for a minute, homie. Sometimes, you know what I mean, somebody be saying something, you know what I mean? Or somebody be doing some crazy ass shit. It doesn't line up with the truth that's in my heart. You know what I'm saying? And I always want to go back to the heart of the matter because fuck all that other bullshit. I mean, I'm just saying. Look it. The bottom line is, you know, you gotta get underneath your feelings, man. The feelings is the surface of who you are. It's just the exterior of yourself. You know what I mean?
Right.
Your feelings is not who you are. You ain't your feelings, you know. You're underneath your feelings, you know. Who you are is what you think, what you say, and what you do. And you can't get away from this. You got to peep this shit, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, you miss out on an opportunity to get better instead of getting bitter. Because when people get bitter, this is what happens. They bitterness will spring up. It's a spring thing. It springs up. And when it springs up, it's the hatred. It's a hatred. It turns into this hatred that you project on other people because this is the part of yourself that, you know, that you hate. You know what I'm saying? You ain't projecting love. You ain't projecting no love, you know, when you do it like this. You understand?
Right.
But you don't see yourself doing this until somebody gets a hold of your ass and put you in a headlock and choke your ass out until you just listen, you know? And you have to listen, you know? Look it. We all make mistakes. That's why you got choked out in the first place, because you made a mistake. and you didn't recognize the mistake. And when you look back, now you can see the mistake. You're like, oh, Lord. And you're thinking, thank you for putting up with my, you know what, for this long, you know, however long that was. You understand?
Right.
You can look back and appreciate this now, what these folks
right.
would be doing like this, right?
Right.
Putting you in a headlock, choking your ass out until you get it straight, right? Because, damn, man, this world has anything to say about this, they're going to chew you up and spit you out. You ain't gonna make a difference. You're going to be just like the recycled people in this world that just never rise to be the emerging leader in the world. You want to be a leader? Well, you have to entrain other people to follow the example that you set forth. And we as people have an energy field that goes out from us and entrains those people to follow the example that we're putting forth, because we're responsible people who take responsibility serious. And the trunk of your brain, where it's connected to your central nervous system, that's where you know the difference between right and wrong. A lot of people don't know the difference between right and wrong. That's why they're perverted when they open their mouth. And a lot of people are perverted for eating that perverted stuff that comes out of their mouth. And so I'm over here saying, whoa, whoa. And then when they get a taste of what I'm saying, they want to puke everything out of themselves that they were listening to before, because that makes no sense. And this fills them up, so when they open their mouth, they have something positive to say instead of this negative crap that I've been listening to for, I don't want to mention how long, man, but it's been too long, bro.
Okay, I'm sorry. You've been bombarded with a lot of negative things, and that's where we need less negative interaction is more positive interaction. I agree with that.
Yeah, you got that straight, dude. And let me tell you this. When you open yourself up the way you do and you allow people to speak into the situation, some people don't speak into the situation. They speak what they think about it, and sometimes it's negative. And that's because they don't understand what you're saying. While other people do, you may be distracted with these people that don't. And if you're feeding this distraction rather than paying attention to the people that do, well, you're going to look at the people that do are going to be doing what you don't want them to do with them, because they don't understand. So you're going to have a lot on your plate. If you don't know how to deal with it, you might be making some mistakes. Well, we all make mistakes.
That's
mistakes
right.
are inevitable. We all make mistakes, but at the moment of realization
right.
that you're about to make a mistake, or that you made a mistake, you have an opportunity, because everything you see is an opportunity for you to do the right thing rather than the wrong thing. And if you can't see yourself doing the wrong thing, then you're blind, and blind people hurt themselves and other people. You know this is true.
Right.
Don't argue, because there's no room to argue. This is something that you receive, because love generates love. We're not talking about other stuff. We're talking about love. You know, people play games. If this is a game, I'm way ahead of the game and game over. I'm telling you, this is about love. And you understand, right?
Yeah, sure.
Of course. So the fact that you open up this avenue of reaching other people, I'm just participating with you, Holmes.
That's right. That's exactly what you're doing. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's
just
why we do
you,
this.
Man. Yeah, I'm just telling you, man. Dude, check this out. My name is Way Busy. Way, capital W-A-Y, capital B-U-S-Y, Way Busy. So when you ever think about anything, you hear about me someday,
right.
you know who I am, dude.
Okay. Way Busy. I'm glad you called.
Yeah, man. You have to tell me, you know. I remember you was on my podcast, and I'm like, well, I was on a lot of podcasts. You have to give me some kind of a sign to let me know, oh, that's right, that's right. You're right. I remember now. See, I need to be reminded sometimes.
So you have a podcast too?
I ain't got none of that stuff, bro. I'm just going through a hard time and just, you know what I'm saying? Just trying to make
use
the best
this one.
Of it. And, huh?
Use this podcast. You can talk through this podcast, my brother.
On your podcast, you mean?
Yeah, you're welcome to call anytime you want, and you know, share.
sweet. Okay. I know a lot of people, I mean, not everybody, but when they tell me to come back, they want me to sit down and listen to their whole trip. And I'm like, I'm not into your trip though, you know.
Yeah.
But you make it seem like it's really a good deal. So yeah, you got my number though, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, you can call me. I need permission to call me, and we can talk outside of this, just social media type, you know, experience here.
Okay, is this your first time calling?
Yeah,
this your first time?
Yes, sir.
Okay, appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries, bro. No worries. You know what I'm saying? That's what we do, dog. That's what we do.
That's right. Well, we reach as many people as we can, and people can. This is a two-way street. You reach people, people reach you.
Yeah. You know what? I got to share. If I have time to share anything, real quick, I share some other stuff.
Go ahead.
I'm gonna try to get in a different spot real quick. I'll say this. Back in the day, you know, I forget what year it was. It might have been in 94 or something. I'm not sure exactly what year it was. I was in prison. And I was walking on a prison yard one day, and somebody else was walking on that prison yard one day, too, at the same time I was. And we kind of crossed paths, so to speak, and the gentleman said a word to me. And so I said something to him, caused us to have a conversation because he initiated it by talking to me, right?
Right.
Right, right. So when people talk to me, I generally listen to what they're saying because I don't want to waste any time, you know what I mean? Because if you playing me, man, we got problems, you know what I mean? Simple,
right.
And just like they would think the same way about me too, right?
Right.
So he was being straight, you know, as far as I was concerned. And I was like, yeah, and stuff. And he goes, you want to smoke a joint? I go, yeah, sure, you know. And he has some really good stuff, right? We smoked a joint, right? And I'm going to tell you something. You may know this guy. I don't know if you may know him. You've probably heard of him. I'm sure you've heard of him. But you may not know him. He never spent no time with dude or anything. But his name is Geronimo Pratt.
Oh, yeah, Geronimo Pratt, yeah.
Yeah. He, this is the guy, me and him, we were walking around a prison yard together. We smoked some weed. He had the weed. He asked me, I said, yeah, let's smoke it. And we smoked it together. And, he was enlightening me, bro. He enlightened me. He took me on a journey. He took me on this journey back to when he was a little boy. And he was in, you know, all kinds of stuff when I was going back to when he was a little boy, though. So I went through all that with him, and I was like, wow, dude. And then he brought me back to when he was a little boy. And then when he was looking through his eyes, I was like looking through his eyes,
mm-hmm.
the way he talked to me, and I was looking up. I was looking up, and he goes, this, what you see right now, is what's going to make this world a better place. And I was looking up, and I said, you mean your father? He goes, exactly. That's what matters. And he was talking about his own race. I'm just saying, you know what I'm saying? And
mm-hmm.
so it took away the line that was there. It took away the line where there was no line. It was just like everybody was with him while he was talking to me. And I was just like, man, thank you, man. I appreciate that. You know what I mean? And then, so every
mm-hmm.
time I think about him, he's a beacon of light to me, so I can go ahead and say what's important to black people, man, is to be a good father to your children and put what you want your children to know into your children, because they're going to have to be responsible for their own actions someday.
That's right.
And that just touched my heart. So that's why I say what I say today.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Appreciate it.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you, and I appreciate everybody that's listening, you know, to the podcast, and hope to be someone that you know, that other people, you know, would be willing to listen to and would like to hear more, and so we can go from there.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you calling in again.
All right. God bless you.
All right, my brother.
Call me.
Thank you.
Call me.
Okay. Okay, so I want to thank the brother for calling in, and we appreciate, I want to know, again, you know, we appreciate you calling in, brother. So this man shot this, the rationalization about fear, was curious, so I started looking up about fear. Things you never knew about fear, they say, from HealthBeat. When the amygdala senses fear, the cerebral cortex, the area of the brain that harnesses reasoning and judgment, becomes impaired, and now it's difficult to make good decisions or think quickly. So the use, I was in fear of my life. It's almost like saying it was difficult for you to make a good decision because you were scared, right? The brain reacts, not saying because he has no actual threat. So there's no actual threat and you in fear. So there's something in you that is fearful and you're not able to make a good rational decision, which costs this young man his life. The brain reacts immediately to signals from the amygdala. This is from taking charge, the impact of fear and anxiety. The brain reacts immediately to signals from the amygdala instead of more rational processing. This overactive state, sometimes called the amygdala hijack, the brain perceives events as negative and remembers them that way. How does fear affect decision making? Fear is a response to the threatening stimulus in the environment. It could be either real or perceived. Fear is an ambiguous human reaction and is seen in people across cultures, social economic levels, races, and religions, right? Answers and explanation. There are actions that take place in the brain that affect decision-making. When afraid, the stress hormone cortisol produces norepinephrine and adrenaline are also released into the bloodstream, right? The amygdala, which processes emotion, is activated and reasoning is suppressed by emotion over logic. That's in man. Van Dyke had no logical reason for gunning down Laquan. Rational and logical decision-making is often circumvented by emotional processing. In the face of a perceived threat, a person more likely to make emotional and instinctive decisions rather than rational ones. Now, a lot of us have been there. Remember that New York mass shooter who walked out of the grocery store with an AR-15 in his hand and not one fired a shot. Nobody shot him. He just killed, I don't know, about 8-10 people in the grocery store. He's walking out with AR in his hand. Nobody fired a shot. What about Dylan Roof, who worshiped with 9 elderly people before he murdered them? Not a shot fired. And he got, I think they took him to Burger King or McDonald's or somewhere. Just one of those things that make you wonder. As Arsenio Hall used to say, one of those things that make you go, So, it's real. The threat is real. If we get that. The CDP, this is from Police BrutalityCenter.org. Statistics. The CDP, Chicago Police Department, from Chicago, kills black people at an annual rate of 8.6 per million and white people at 0.3 per million. The Chicago Police Department on average kills about 26 times more black people than white people every year. American police kill civilians at extraordinary higher rates than police in other high-income democracies. According to the Prison Policy Initiative, a criminal justice think tank, in 2020, U.S. police killed 3.35 per 1 million people. Canadian police, highest, the second highest on the list, killed 0.98 per 1 million. England and Wales killed civilians at a rate of 0.05 per 1 million. In other words, police in the U.S. kill people at a rate at least three times higher than Canadian police do, and at least 60 times the rate of police in England and Wales. U.S. police killed more people in the first 24 days of 2015 than cops in England and Wales did throughout the previous 24 years. Something's wrong with this picture. Civilians killed by police in 2023 is 612. Of course, we're not finished yet, right? That's from Mapping Police Violence. From policeepi.uicedu, black males comprise of 6.1% of the U.S. total, of the total U.S. population, but 24.9% of all persons killed by law enforcement. Blacks are 6.1% of the total U.S. population and 24.9% of all persons killed by law enforcement. That is evidence that Americans, particularly black Americans, should be or are fearful of law enforcement. Fear will kill you. Fear will get you killed. It's just that when some people murder while fearful, they get death duty with pay or a big cover-up and a slap on the hand, and others get the book thrown at them. What should we expect from an agency, a person who may have a predisposition, a bias against black folk, has a history of being aggressive and acting out that aggression with little to no consequence? Who has a powerful union and blue shield at their disposal? Who is trained to shoot to kill? What can you expect from that? From Statista Police, the number of police killed in action have been in triple digits since 1907, they said. I just take you up. 1907 was 102. 2000, they skipped 2020, 417, 21, 623, 22, 224, 23, 785. This is evidence that law enforcement should be fearful. Fear will kill you. Fear will get you killed. Monsters will kill you faster. Something is wrong with this picture. I would like to say that law enforcement was created to preserve the lives of black men, but I'd be telling a huge lie. The slave patrols are said to be the forerunners of law enforcement, and you can see how law enforcement has brutalized, abused black folk for centuries with impunity. To the fact that they're saying this is the first, it's 2023, they're saying it's historic that these six cops are being, you know, held accountable for their crimes. That's a crime in itself. And they trace some of their dirt back to 2019. That's a crying shame. I'm running out of time, y'all. I can't even cover this. I'm just going to briefly talk about this situation. This is some weird stuff just going on in the country. Jacksonville.com, story news. A Texas woman was sentenced to 5 years in prison for voting in the 2016 presidential election when she was ineligible because she was on probation. She was convicted in 2012 on charges related to inflating refunds for clients. She was a tax preparer. Fort Worth Star Telegram reports that Mason testified she didn't know people convicted of felonies couldn't vote until they complete their sentence.
She was prosecuted in the same county where Mexican nationalist last year was sentenced to 8 years in prison over illegal voting. Voter fraud convictions are rare, but Texas Republican leaders have zealously pursued and cracked down on illegal voting in recent years. From The Guardian, Pamela Maher, the 44-year-old activist in Memphis, was convicted in November of trying to register to vote while she was ineligible. On Monday, Moses, who is black, was sentenced to 6 years and one day in prison. Amy Rich, Reach, the local prosecutor, has trumpeted both the conviction and the sentence in the press releases. Hey, she got what she deserved, right? In 2015, Moses pleaded guilty to perjury for tampering with evidence in connection with allegations that she acts that she stalked and harassed a local judge. Tampering with evidence, one of the handful of felonies that causes someone to permanently lose their voting rights in Tennessee. Moses, still on probation, knowingly tried to register to vote in 2019. First, it's rare to see prosecutors bring criminal charges against someone for election crimes. So the author said he was curious whether this was a bona fide case of fraud or someone who had made a mistake. Second, there had been growing awareness of racial disparities and punishments for election-related frauds. Well, you know, there are racial disparities and punishment for crimes in this country based on race, right? That's a fact. I've been saying that since I've been in college, and that's a long time ago. Black people such as Crystal Mason and Hervis Rogers have faced years in prison for making mistakes about their voting eligibility, while white voters have received much lighter sentences for election-related crimes. The case wasn't straightforward at all. Behind the scenes, Tennessee officials conceded that they had made a series of mistakes concerning Moses' voting eligibility. See this? In 2015, Moses pleaded guilty to her felony. She says no one told her she couldn't vote. They never mentioned anything about voting. They never mentioned anything about not voting, being able to vote. Election officials should have removed her from the rolls, but the court never sent election officials the documents they needed to do so. According to the letter from an election official that the investigator obtained, Moses didn't know anything was amiss until 2019 when she launched a long shot mayoral campaign. Election officials said she couldn't appear on the ballot because of her felony. When they began to look into her eligibility, they also realized she never been taken off the voter rolls. Moses went to court and asked the judge to clarify whether she was still on probation, and the court confirmed that she was. What happened next is the crux of the case against her. Moses did not believe the judge, so she went to the local probation office and asked for an officer to figure it out. An officer figured out and signed a certificate confirming her probation had ended. Tennessee people with felony convictions who want to vote needed that document from a correction official. Moses submitted it to the local election officials along with the voter registration form. But the day afterward, an official at the corrections department wrote an email to election officials saying the probation officer had made an error on Moses' certificate. Moses was still serving an active felony sentence, they wrote, and was not eligible to vote. They offered no explanation for their mistake. Such errors are actually fairly common in Tennessee. About 8% of the certificates submitted are rejected because the voters remain ineligible. During the Moses trial, prosecutors argued that she knew she was ineligible to vote when she submitted her certificate. She submitted it even though a judge had recently told her she was ineligible, even knowing that the order denied her expiration of sentence. Moses submitted the form with her application for voter registration and signed an oath as to the accuracy of the information submitted. Pamela Moses knowingly made or consented to a false entry on her permanent registration. How is that when she has a state, a city officials giving her the document? It's not her. She's not making a document up. The instructions of the certificate of restoration form are very clear to the probation officer or the clerk. They say you will check the records, and you will sign off on this based on what the records say, right? This creates a really scary prospect for people who think they're being wrongly told
they're not eligible. Moses is currently in custody. It shows the harsh consequences prosecutors can bring as people with felony convictions make mistakes. For trying to register to vote, she received 6 years when a no, you are not eligible to vote because your voting rights have been permanently revoked. You are no longer listed as a registered voter will do. Your name is listed as a registered voter. It's indicative that you are a registered voter like anyone else whose name appears on a book. What is wrong with these folks? Something is, you know, something needs to be done about this. And if you got the racial biases and things like that. We still got stuff like that going on in the country, you know. It's just, you know, I'm running out of time and I'm going to have to close the show. But this type of stuff, you know, you guys, you high-powered lawyers out here running, chasing all these, you know, these cases. Y'all need to get up on this, on all of this stuff. Anyway, I want to thank, Blog Talk Radio for having me. We Talk Productions, Mr. Kenneth Jones, and my parents and the creator, most of all. Until next week, y'all. Each one reach one, each one teach one. Do your own research and continue the whole conversation. Don't worry about people. Do not agree with everything that you're saying. It's not the point. The point that we need to learn from each other and teach each other. Okay, don't wait for somebody to give you information. Seek out your own information. Until next week, y'all. Called in tonight.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.